Huge show for you today. Scott Pianowski joins to go through the pressing questions / viewer's guide for the running back and quarterback position. Anthony Richardson. Of course, we have to talk about Anthony Richardson. It's an off-season training camp fantasy football podcast. We discuss him and what we need to see out of training camp to feel good about his aggressive ADP. What other quarterback battles are we paying attention to in this offseason? And at the running back position, is there anything that Blake Corum could do to scare you away from Kyren Williams? Who's the Chargers back to draft? All that and more coming up. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, July 23rd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is the one and only Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Matt. Yeah, it's a great day to talk ball. We're getting through July. And we know once you get to August, it's prime fantasy football draft season. And right now we're doing mock drafts. We're doing best ball drafts. We're doing industry drafts. But we know the purpose of this program is to get you jacked up for the season and try to get you in the position where, you know, these are the reps. This is kind of like training camp for us, right? We want to be ready because our season basically starts in August where we start drafting almost every day. It feels like I have a draft. So this is why you lift all them weights. This is why you run all those, you know, suicides and all that stuff. This is why you do all that stuff. So you have the best possible season you can in August. And unfortunately, maybe it's for the best. Teams are so much more guarded now with information, and teams are so much more guarded with players in exhibition play that a lot of what we do now is really baked in with speculation, right? We don't have the hard proof of things that we maybe had once upon a time in a different era, but that's okay. It just, you know, sets the bar higher for us. It makes a bigger challenge for us, but I'm just jacked that we're almost to the football season because, you know, all the free agency preview and all the draft mocks and then who won the draft and is this guy going to get tagged? Is this guy going to get traded and all that stuff, you know, holdouts and all these things. You know, let's actually start playing some football. Let's put some hats on.
I love the offseason. I love offseason content and, you know, talking big picture about things and theorizing and speculating and projecting players and all that stuff. But, you know, then training camp comes around. Like, not our training camp, Scott, but real life training camp comes around. And I get pretty jacked up for the season once again. And I've said on the show, I'm very, very excited for the 2024 season. And seeing just a little bit trickling out from training camps has gotten me that much more, you know, excited to get into the season, man. But let's waste no more time. Let's jump into this show here. Training camps are open. We offered up our preview, kind of our pressing question / viewer's guide for wide receivers and tight ends last week with Dalton Del Don. Today,
great show.
Yeah, great show. This one's going to be a banger as well, Scott, because you're here to talk through the quarterbacks and the running backs and kind of our pressing questions here. We've got six for each position. Let's start with the quarterbacks. First one up here, what's left of Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins? I group these two specifically together, Scott, because they're older, although Rodgers is quite a few years older. You know, he's going to be 41 during the season. Older quarterbacks coming off Achilles who have spent zero time with their current NFL teams because Rodgers, yeah, he was there last year, but he lasted four plays. Kirk Cousins is moving to a new team with the Atlanta Falcons. We don't have to talk about these guys, but I did realize, Scott, while putting together this outline, and you contributed the vast majority of the questions. They're all great questions, but it dawned on me that we have a lot of health-related questions with big-name quarterbacks this year generally. I mean, Joe Burrow, Deshaun Watson, you can group into this. Also, the guy we're going to talk about in the next question, he is another player with a big health question. But I wanted specifically to focus on Rodgers and Cousins because I think there's a bit of a through line there with their older quarterbacks that are trying to support big-name players that we want to hit in fantasy, like Garrett Wilson, like Drake London, like Bijan Robinson. So, Scott, what do we want to see out of camp? What are you looking to hear? Any clues on what we get out of Rodgers and Cousins this year?
Yeah, how dare you leave Kyle Pitts off that list of Atlanta players we're trying to unlock. When it comes to the quarterbacks, right, you're at the fork in the road. You can talk about the old guys. You can talk about the young guys. We'll get to them in a minute. But it's just interesting how there's a bifurcation there. Last year, this time, I'm like, Garrett Wilson's going to the moon. And he didn't even get over the George Washington Bridge because obviously the Jets season ended four snaps in. And it's just kind of funny that Aaron Rodgers, walk-in Hall of Famer, multiple MVP winner, surprisingly a light bag in the playoffs. They found some strange ways to lose playoff games. But now it's like Aaron Rodgers just a conduit, right? We don't really care if we draft Aaron Rodgers or not, whatever. He's super flex, backup quarterback, fine. All we want, Aaron Rodgers has one job to do. It's just make the offense, give it more buoyancy, and make Garrett Wilson a star. You'll get Breece Hall in the red zone more often, more octane in this offense. Could the Jets be a playoff team? Could the Jets be the AFC East champion? That's all this stuff is in play. If Aaron Rodgers is average, if he's a little above average, if he's good, nobody's expecting or asking him to be great. We just want Aaron Rodgers to be capable of playing 4 months of football, because the clown car they've had, most teams are screwed if the backup has to play. And a good backup quarterback is Gardner Minshew, who was, you know, that 100-mile donut that you put in there. You don't really want him to play the full season. The Colts made the best of it. He was okay. He's okay backup. And the Raiders think he might even be their starter. We'll see about that. But Aaron Rodgers, we don't need you to be an MVP anymore. Just make Garrett Wilson a monster. Just make Breece Hall justify the ADP he has. Well, he'll be the second or third pick in a lot of leagues. And some people think he might be the best running back in fantasy football, period. This Jets offense is all going to be held together by Rodgers, even though we don't necessarily want to draft him. So there's an answer I'd love to have, because we're taking Breece Hall as a top five pick, maybe a top two or top three pick. We're still taking Garrett Wilson. And that second round for receivers is really kind of strange this year. How do you feel about Olave? How do you feel about Marvin Harrison Jr. right out of the box? It's not – the second round used to be a really comfortable place to draft receivers. I don't think it is as much. But, man, that gets a lot smoother if Garrett Wilson is great. And I think the talk is a lot simpler with Atlanta, because I feel better. Cousins is younger. There's more pieces in that offense. Obviously, Arthur Smith is gone, and everybody in fantasy is happy about that. Now he's Pittsburgh's problem. But the quarterbacks were so bad. You could – asking – London and asking Pitts and asking Bijan Robinson to survive with the quarterback play they've had recently. It was a really difficult ask. And, you know, Zach Robinson taking over that offense is really fun too. He's from the Sean McVay tree. So the Falcons have that easy schedule. They have those indoor games. I think they have a chance to be one of the most fantasy friendly teams, because there's just so much star power here. And Kirk Cousins has always been really good to his star players. So that to me feels like a smoother transition. I think Rodgers is more of a speculative player this year based on his career path and his age and everything. But I would love to know right now. I'd love the genie to come out of the bottle and tell me, yeah, don't worry about it. Aaron Rodgers is good. Don't worry about it. Kirk Cousins is healthy, and this Michael Penix thing is going to be down the road. They're kicked the can. I still don't understand that draft pick. I never will. But this is a potential. These are players we're drafting early. Even if we don't necessarily want to draft Cousins and Rodgers as our starters, we're drafting their skill position talent early. So we need to know that the connective tissue of this offense is okay.
I mean, four guys from these two teams, Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, Garrett Wilson, and Drake London, are top 17 picks in best ball drafts like right now. Top 17 picks from two of the worst offenses in the league last year. Two of the most unwatchable offenses in the league. So, yeah, we are putting a significant amount of weight on these two guys' shoulders. And I'm with you that I generally feel better about the Atlanta, like I feel better about the Atlanta ecosystem. One, because, and there's your first drink of training camp, Scott. The Atlanta ecosystem, I think Zach Robinson's going to be better than Nate Hackett as a play caller. They do have more surrounding talent there. I think the offensive line's a little bit more proven. I also think, by the way, they're going to need to push that offense a little bit, because that defense in Atlanta could be a bottom five unit. You're not going to get that in New York. So New York has the advantage here. I think if I had to pick who's going to be the better football team this year, I think I'd go with the Jets. But who's the better fantasy environment? I do think that's Atlanta. And also, by the way, Scott, like one thing to consider here is, yeah, just the last time we saw these two quarterbacks play extensive action, I think overall, yes, 100% Aaron Rodgers, better quarterback at his peak. You know, he's one of the top five quarterbacks that I've ever seen play the game, like just with my own two eyes, throw out stats and accomplishments and all that. But the last time we saw Aaron Rodgers play, he was averaging 217 yards per game and 1.5 touchdowns per game. I don't think that guy, now, and stats aren't everything, and Garrett Wilson's a much better receiver than any of the guys he was playing with that year, you know, Christian Watson, Alan Lazard, whatever. That doesn't tell the whole story, but I think the guy that we saw in 2022 is not enough to get Garrett Wilson to the moon. Like, I think we need a slightly better version of that, which I think can come if he's engaged and all the stuff that he was last year, that jacked up about being with the Jets. I wonder if that's still present, or is the honeymoon over and obviously the injury question? Whereas Cousins, last time we saw him, he was still a really good quality quarterback in the league, but he's just historically been a more volatile and streaky player.
I'm glad you mentioned the Atlanta defense. At some point this summer, I'll probably do the top carnival offenses for fantasy football, which is the teams that can move the ball and teams that can't stop other teams. So it just sets up for 30 to 27 football games where there's tons of fantasy goodness. And man, the Falcons have all the ingredients. It's just don't screw this up, Zach Robinson. You're the chef. Don't screw this up, Kirk Cousins. You're in the kitchen too. The Falcons could be one of those. You know, when you're setting up on Sunday, what teams are going to watch? Who's on my primary screens? Because let's face it, nobody watches one game at a time anymore. We're all watching multiple screens. The Falcons, they could have a dedicated spot on my TV this year. That's how excited I am about that offense.
All right, let's move on to our next question. And it is a quarterback health related question. Mm-hmm. Anthony Richardson, as you referred to him, America's sweetheart. I think the question we have to ask here is, one, do you have the stomach to draft him at his ceiling or just generally where his ADP is? And two, are we going to hear anything in the offseason? Like anything that you hear in the offseason, is that going to change your mind on your Anthony Richardson stance? Because, Scott, we've already heard, you know, in minicamp, like, oh, he's resting his shoulder, the soreness. But, like, don't worry, if there's a game tomorrow, he could play the whole thing. I will say I generally feel okay about, like, the recovery, and I feel really good about Richardson. He's got accuracy concerns. We know that. But I feel good about his processing. I feel good about his pocket movement. I feel just okay with him where he is as a player, but I do not, Scott, want to be hearing like, okay, yeah, it's a rest day and blah 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 blah, all that stuff in training camp. I want like a clean training camp for Anthony Richardson. That would maybe have me pause at some point, like if we start to hear those things. But what about you? What are you looking to hear from Colts camp this offseason?
Yeah, it might be a case of no news is good news, right? We just don't want setbacks. The setup's so good. Another team that plays indoors, Shane Steichen is an offensive designer we feel really good about. And I comped Richardson to Ellie De La Cruz from Fantasy Baseball, who was a player into the season, had limited experience, but had a really high upside, steals a lot of bases. He's got a lot of power in his game. And people were drafting him at his ceiling, which I thought maybe might have been a little bit irresponsible. And of course, now Ellie De La Cruz leads the major leagues in stolen bases by a fair amount. He's hitting a fair amount of home runs, too. He's basically justified the pick, even though it might go down as a par. There is obviously a lot of excitement. Producer Colin can't wait to draft Anthony Richardson in all of our mock drafts. I think in one of them, he took Richardson two picks after Josh Allen, which to me is like, I think that's solving a problem that doesn't exist, right? That's a solution in search of a problem is how I phrased it. We know a quarterback, right? You could do well at any price point. It's basically the public transportation system in New York. You miss a train, you miss a bus, there's another one coming in 5 minutes. So I don't think I'm going to draft Richardson at his ceiling ADP, which makes me a little bit nervous. But I see the path. Steichen, obviously, his fingerprints are all over the Jalen Hurts breakout in Philadelphia when they were together. Jonathan Taylor, I think, is really – you can get Jonathan Taylor in the second round, man. You have done really well. That's a pick I'd like to make as many times as I can. I know he may have ultimately percolated in the first round when – August ADP crystallizes, but we've always been Michael Pittman fans on this program. Richardson could be, I mean, he could be the cover boy next year. He could be on the covers of the fantasy magazines, you know, what you're buying when you're going to the beach for your vacation, all that stuff. Colin's going to Newport next week. Maybe he'll be reading some fantasy football magazines. He won't be producing the show, but have a great trip back east. I'm wearing the Whaler's hat and honor view, but I'm not a draft at ceiling type of guy, especially at a position this deep, but I want the Colts to be another team that could have some carnival potential. I love the guy who calls the plays, big Taylor guy, big Pittman guy. Is the shoulder history enough to pull back from Richardson's upside as a touchdown runner? That's a big thing. We're not getting, you know, Steichen's not going to tell us that. We're not going to see that until September, but Anthony Richardson is going to be one of the most talked about fantasy players this summer, and it's well justified.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. I kind of disagree with you that we're drafting him at a ceiling just because, like, I think his ceiling could be like a 400-point player, you know, a 2018 Josh Allen type of breakout where he's the QB1. He scores 396 fantasy points. He rushes for 8 touchdowns. He throws for 37 touchdowns. Now, if Anthony Richardson comes out and he has 37 touchdowns at 10 interceptions, I don't realistically think that's in the range of outcomes. But I will say the environment is great. The offensive line played really well last year. The play caller's awesome. Not only am I a big Michael Pittman fan and obviously a Jonathan Taylor fan, but like Josh Downs is awesome. He is a separation guy. He is going to be consistently open for Anthony Richardson. I think A.D. Mitchell is the type of receiver that they're missing. So I don't know that there's anything in camp that could get me to change my Richardson opinion. I mean, a lot of it is just my questions with him are more so, yeah, can he stay healthy, which you're not going to know in training camp. The only thing that would scare me off is like if we continue to hear, oh, he's rest, you know, just some of these like not positive reports, basically just like cautionary tales of his health, then maybe I'll pump the brakes a little bit. But I think the margin for error is really good here because of the environment, because of some of the flashes he showed. Nobody's going to tell you that he's like a consistently accurate quarterback, but I do think the way he processed last year, I think the way he managed the pocket are not like raw quarterback traits. So he is, I guess you could ostensibly call him like a rookie quarterback, but I think the fact that he's been in the building for a year and has had some snaps at NFL game speed makes me confident that he can come out and just be like a solid starting quarterback. If he's a solid starting quarterback in the league, like he's going to probably outkick QB6 just on the rushing stuff alone. But my questions there kind of run into what is the offense designed like? How aggressive are they with him as a runner? I don't think they were over aggressive last year. I think he just kind of had some bad luck injuries. Like, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of questions there, but I don't know that anything from training camp is going to change my mind unless it's an injury type thing.
It's just weird to me. I'm looking at the Yahoo ADP right now at the quarterback position, and Richardson's ahead of CJ Stroud, just had a monster season, ahead of Kyler Murray, who's been a star before, ahead of Joe Burrow, ahead of Dak Prescott, second in the MVP voting last year. I get it. A lot of those guys don't run. You know, Burrow and Prescott aren't going to run much. Jordan Love, Brock Purdy are the next couple guys in that list. It's just, I'm not the type of person who drafts. Now, look, I've always said wait for proof is a dead fantasy strategy. You need to skate to where the puck is headed, not to where it's been. So I want to be proactive. I want to try to connect dots and see things before they happen. But I just feel like with Richardson, the fantasy populace is just shoving all the chips in before we've even seen the flop. And, you know, maybe he's pocket aces, you know, maybe that's justified. That's not the way I generally draft, but that said, I can't, this might be the one individual player I'm most excited to see on opening day.
Yeah, same. I think that's going to have a spot on the TV over here. Like whatever the Colts week one game is, I'm going to, honestly, and I wonder if he plays in the preseason, I'll even just be interested to see some of that, just how comfortable he looks and everything. Like, is he attacking vertically? Because he has some guys that I think he can push the ball down the field to, at least in the intermediate range with Pittman and Downs. And then obviously A.D. Mitchell down the field. That's going to be a critical thing. I guess we can put a bow on this here. I don't think he's being drafted at his ceiling, but I think he is being like all of the hype is priced into his ADP. There's no question about that with Anthony Richardson. Okay, let's move on to the next one here. What are the camp reports and preseason results? And that I added the preseason results into this one for the first and second overall pick. The question here is really just, are we going to get any signals as to how playable Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels are right away, Scott?
Man, I would love to get signal here because these are what a great year for quarterback drafting. Five of them go, and you know, Williams won the Heisman 2 years ago. Daniels won it last year. No quarterback has ever gone into – no number one overall quarterback pick has gone into the SUV that Caleb Williams is going into in Chicago, where they had good receiving talent. They drafted more receiving talent. It was a team that was on the upswing last year. The defense was playing really well. And maybe it's not a carnival team. It's an outdoor team. It's a team that already can defend pretty well. So I don't know what they're going to ask Williams to do right away, but – And who was Caleb Williams, right? Is he the player he was 2 years ago? He did slide back a little bit at USC last year. Of course, football is a team game. Success and failure has many different parents, so it's a complicated issue. But you have to be excited about Caleb Williams. And with Daniels, again, Heisman campaign, led all college football in yards per rushing attempt, and that's with all the sack yardage baked in because they do the stats different in college. I think there's a pretty decent chance. Here's a hot take. Can Jaden Daniels be better than Anthony Richardson for fantasy? This is one reason why I'm not drafting Richardson, is I can squint and see a scenario where maybe Daniels has a better fantasy season. We know there's good talent in that receiver room. And Daniels, I think right now you can write down like 850 rushing yards, a lot of rushing touchdowns. He's not the thickest guy. I don't know how many hits you want him to take. But every draft is fun. Every draft is interesting. But there's some years we don't get. The quarterbacks don't fit. Teams don't have that screaming quarterback need that some of the teams had this year. This was a perfect storm where we had good quarterbacks and we had teams that really badly, of course, you know, NFL all about the quarterback. Fantasy football necessarily isn't. But this is going to be a watershed draft that we're going to look back on 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Like the 1983 draft, they did a 30 for 30 on it, Elway to Marino, and they come back and look, you know, why did teams pass on Dan Marino? Why were people taking Ken O'Brien or Todd Blackledge or Tony Eason before Dan Marino? Obviously, that was the big mistake. We're going to go back and see, did the teams take the right quarterbacks? There was a lot of intrigue before this draft. And are these guys fantasy playable right away? I think Daniels definitely will be because of that rushing component. With Williams, it's going to be how much is he asked to do right away? But yeah, I can't. I hope they play in the preseason. This is in the older days, they would have played some preseason football. I wouldn't be shocked if they just, you know, cameo the 5-6 snaps just to make sure they know how to call out the signals and take a snap from center. And then they go on the bench and, you know, they put the hat on. But yeah, it's going to be a fun year. And I think Daniels is playable right now in fantasy. I think Williams is one of those really fun upside quarterback twos that you draft.
I'm glad you said that about preseason, because I really hope we see these guys play in the preseason. It's not everything. I always come back to Cam Newton. Like, he looked horrible in the preseason. God, yeah. Like, non-functional in the preseason.
Then he detonated in September.
Right, yeah. He comes out, he throws for over 400 yards against the Packers. And there were some turnovers and stuff like that. But they clearly didn't unveil all the wrinkles. And, of course, with Washington with RG3 in his rookie season, they didn't unveil anything. They come out in week one against the Saints and they destroy them on these read option plays.
Total ambush. Yep.
CJ Stroud looked completely lost in his first preseason game. This is the tough part about preseason. Sometimes quarterback evaluation is really tough. I think running back evaluation, you can tell if a running back has got the juice in the preseason. Chris Wessling always used to talk about that at NFL. Like, I remember the year that Mark Ingram like took that career step, he was just banging that drum that, like, oh, you could see it in the preseason. And I think you can do that with younger running backs. Yeah,
Edgerrin James was like that his rookie year.
It's another great example about like running backs you can kind of see in the preseason. But teams are so guarded now, but I almost want them to let the guard down. I think fantasy analysis has kind of gone astray with like, we're counting, oh, who's playing in two receiver sets in the preseason, and like, oh, this running back's been on this percentage of dropbacks with the quarterbacks. Like, that analysis is why I drafted Damian Pierce last year, and that analysis is why people didn't draft Christian Kirk last year when he ended up being probably the better value among the Jaguars receivers because he wasn't in two receiver sets, all this stuff. So I think fantasy analysis in the preseason has kind of gone astray, because really it should just be about, let me get eyes on this guy and just see not the performance, not the stats, but just how comfortable he looks. So that is what I'm looking for Caleb Williams. And it does sound like he might play a little bit in the preseason. With Jaden Daniels, I'm with you that he is probably the guy that is more playable right away, but I also think there are way more questions about that environment. You know, the Commanders, Dan Quinn and Adam Peters talking about it today about, you know, when he's ready, we'll know, and when he's ready, he'll also know. I think the Bears, he's going to start week one. I don't even care about, like, Marcus Mariota and talking about that stuff. But that offensive line, I think, has a potential to be a disaster and ruin what could be a decently interesting offense because of the skill position players. So I'm with you that Daniels is more interesting for fantasy, but I also have more questions with that environment that I'll be monitoring, at least in training camp and preseason.
And you also said very well that a lot of times with the preseason now, it's not necessarily what you do, but it's who you're playing with. And I realize that's going to give us some false signals, but that's the company you keep is part of what we're trying to figure out when we watch those exhibition games. Because again, the primary players are playing less now than they ever have. And that's a reality we have to live in. But who are you? What offense were you part of? Who did you take snaps with? You know, who was on the field in certain packages? Even understanding that every offensive coordinator right now is like, yeah, these are the real plays, and we're going to run those in September. We're not going to unleash them and unveil them and expose them to our opponents in August. That's a fact of life. But just keep it's not perfect, but just keep a keen eye to those personnel groups, because there are some signals to be picked up from that.
100%. Yeah. I mean, Damian Pierce, again, to bring that example back, like, who's to say they weren't having him play all those snaps because they wanted to see if he could function in their zone blocking scheme, which ended up being a huge issue for him last year. So that preseason stuff can sometimes get us. I'm interested to watch the preseason this year. That's how you know I'm a sicko for football right now. Let's move on to the next question here. Bryce Young, is Dave Canales a miracle worker? As you noted, Scott, on the outline, Young is definitely not like the first highly touted rookie quarterback to fall on his face in year one. So what is the next step for Bryce Young, and what can we get out of training camp to potentially give us those signals and clues?
Yeah, Canales' fingerprints all over the Geno Smith season 2 years ago. And then he had a lot to do with Baker Mayfield, kind of. Not that Mayfield had a monster year by any means, but Baker Mayfield was solid last year and got paid as a result. And he did what he wanted to do. He got the ball to Mike Evans, and he had Rashad White have a good fantasy season. It'd be nice if Chris Godwin could score a touchdown every once in a while. But that was a decent playoff team. They won a playoff game. They beat the snot out of the Eagles, who couldn't do anything right at the end of the season. And Canales was a big part of that. So nobody thought much of Geno Smith a couple of years ago. Baker Mayfield was basically left for fantasy dead a year ago. And with Bryce Young, it's like, look, it's not that this is likely, but it's possible. Josh Allen was really bad his first season. Troy Aikman was really bad his first season. John Elway was really bad his first season. That's two Hall of Famers. I think Josh Allen is well on his way. So maybe comparing Bryce Young to those guys is wrong, but
I don't like guys, Jared Goff or Tua. Those guys, Jared, you know, yep, not great first
two
years.
More great examples. Yes, for sure. And we could play this game all day. You want to go far enough back, you know, Terry Bradshaw. It's just, Elway was horrible too. Elway, man, they traded all the chips to get him, and he was so bad. They actually got benched for Steve DeBerg in the middle of his rookie year, and then DeBerg got hurt, and they had to play. They had to play John Elway, and I think it worked out fine for those guys. But Young, did he play extremely poorly last year? Of course he did. Was he set up to fail? Would anybody have failed? How would C.J. Stroud have acquitted himself in this offense? It was so bad for so many different reasons. No skill talent. You know, they've added Deontay Johnson, who I know is a big RP favorite from way back. He has a chance now to at least survive. And it's not so much, again, this is just that the quarterback's the connective tissue, right? We're not necessarily trying to get Bryce Young to improve because we're eager to draft him. Although, you know, if he comes around, maybe he becomes a depth piece. That's fine. We want Deontay Johnson to be playable. We want people in this backfield to be playable. And it's not in the script, but, you know, does Jonathan Brooks do anything this summer? When can we expect him back? Who is the starter when he's not there? You know, Chuba Hubbard has been, you know, quasi playable. We expect less from our running back two and running back threes these days. So maybe somebody in that mix can be useful while Brooks is getting healthy. And, you know, Brooks, of course, an interesting dynasty piece. I believe Dave Canales took a job, worst team in the league, an ownership group that's hard to trust. Dave Canales believes in himself. He's at the point now that he thinks he can fix anything. You can total your car and Dave Canales will come there with his ultimate set of tools like Spicoli's dad and say, I can fix it. And he thinks he can fix the Carolina offense. I would love to see him do it. He's 2 for 2 with two quarterbacks. Nobody wanted the touch, so maybe he can do some miracles with Bryce Young. I'm eager to see it because, yeah, I'd like to have some Deontay Johnson in my life this year. I'm open to Hubbard. I'm open maybe to Brooks, although I don't like wait-and-see players. I like to pick up those guys when other people drop them. I don't necessarily like to draft into them in August, but at least there's some hope for the Carolina offense. We didn't have any of that last year.
Yeah, I think it's worth investigating how Dave Canales like fixed Geno Smith and fixed Baker Mayfield and how that maps to Bryce Young. With Geno, I think it was just they leaned into what he liked to do, which was deep drop backs in the pocket, you know, play action and like push the ball down the field to two receivers that he had a lot of trust in. I think it was more complicated with Mayfield because he was a guy that They kind of just put him back into what he liked to do in college, which is get in the gun, spread things out, and kind of point and shoot, and mostly funnel the ball to Mike Evans. Like, get the ball to your best receiver, simplify those reads. They also really adjusted Mike Evans' route tree. Like, he ran far fewer 9 routes than he did, which made no sense in that final year with Tom Brady, where Mike Evans run a bunch of go routes, and they can't pass protect, and Brady's getting the ball out of his hands in 2 seconds. You can't even have a fade, like a go route develop in that amount of time. So they adjust Mike Evans' route tree. They let Baker do things that make him more comfortable. I think that plan, you know, quick strike offense, get the ball out of his hands, kind of spread things out and simplify things to adjust the route tree for your number one receiver. I can see Dave Canales doing that with Bryce Young and definitely with Deontay Johnson, who when they tweaked his role a little bit last year with the Steelers, he had a career best yards per target, yards per route run, the whole thing. So I can see Dave Canales getting this done. a lot of it is just like, then what's the ceiling for Bryce Young? Like you said, I don't know. I mean, if he's the 15th best quarterback in the league next year, that's a huge jump from where he was the year prior. And I think in that situation, Deontay Johnson is going to be a value. I think Jonathan Brooks, when he's healthy, we had a great discussion with Dr. Edwin Poros on the show a couple episodes ago. So people can listen to that if they want kind of more detail on where Brooks could be as a rookie, that he's going to end up being a value. And maybe even a guy like Xavier Leggett, or, you know, some, you're going to get some gross Adam Thielen PPR scam type weeks. I think that could be a potential boon there if Bryce Young can simply be fixed to be the 15th best quarterback in the league.
One other thing I want to mention, now Baker Mayfield undersized at 6'1", and Canales was able to make that work. Now Bryce Young, unfortunately, is 5'10", so that brings on extra challenges. And I know this is not the only short quarterback we're going to talk about on this show, because there's another one coming up, but Canales understands some of the different things you need to do to, because these quarterbacks aren't, you know, they're not growing anymore. They're as tall as they're going to be. So Canales is the type of guy who's creative enough to work around some of those physical limitations and make it playable for his quarterback.
Last two are kind of like camp battle type questions. And we, this one I think is less of the camp battle, so I moved this into its own kind of category, but I'm curious, does Russell Wilson keep that quote pole position? That's what the Steelers and Mike Tomlin have said about Russell Wilson, whether he's the starting quarterback. They said he's in pole position to be the starting quarterback in week one. All the observers, beat writers and stuff, they seem to think Wilson has a pretty strong stranglehold on this job. I think Wilson could be a usable fantasy quarterback if he's good, if he hasn't completely fallen off, and this environment I think takes a positive step in the right direction. I think Wilson, again, we want to know just where he's at, because that is going to affect the value of the run game. That is going to affect a guy like George Pickens. And there are definitely people, you know, dynasty bag holders that still want to see Justin Fields on the football field here for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So finding out if Russell Wilson, if he can really keep a strong hold on that starting job and really not relinquish it at any point this year, I do think that's going to matter a little bit for some of those supporting players.
Yeah, everything is new here, right? I mean, Wilson's new, Fields is new, Arthur Smith is the new OC. We know this team doesn't have losing seasons under Mike Tomlin, but he's a CEO coach. He's, and if anything, he's from a defensive background. I think Wilson might have the opposite type of season than he had last year, where he wasn't really good in real life, but he was very fantasy playable. I think he's quarterback 8 or something like that. And that was because Denver basically scored almost all of its touchdowns through the air. We know Cortland Sutton had a wonderful season. What a great boundary and contested catch guy he is. And a lot of that is Sean Payton. But they couldn't wait to get out of the Russell Wilson contract and, you know, all that dead money they had to eat and everything. I will say this. I look at the crystal ball and I imagine that there's going to be 5 or 6 games that Justin Fields plays. And they're going to be the Justin Fields experience, where half the room is screaming out, he's really not that good, and half the room screaming out, I don't care, he just ran for 115 yards and a touchdown. And that obviously is the, you know, it's the Rich Rebar Konami code, right? I mean, the way they score fantasy points for quarterbacks means that rushing component is enormous, and you don't even have to be really a good passer to be, you know, Tim Tebow wasn't a good passer, for crying out loud, and he ran to fantasy relevance. There's been so many examples of guys who balance out both things. I'd like to see what Justin Fields could do in a new organization. He needs to solve that sack problem. But the difference between Wilson this year and last year is, last year, again, they were lean on the pass in the red zone. The Steelers have two good running backs. Najee Harris, who's kind of into his lame duck year. They didn't pick up his option, but they're still going to play him plenty. We know Arthur Smith loves to run the ball. And then they have Jaylen Warren. They have Cordarrelle Patterson. I think Twitter's going to freak out when Cordarrelle Patterson scores the first rushing touchdown for the Steelers this year.
Oh, God, and yes. Let's go.
Let's go. It's already happened. I can see it now. Arthur Smith is going to basically be trending on, I say Twitter, it's X, whatever they want to call it. For all I know, they may have rebranded that site by the start of the season. But here's the other thing too, right? You might say, well, hey, I see these other quarterbacks I like. I'm not drafting Russell Wilson. That's fine. You need to have a take on George Pickens. You need to have a take on Harrison Warren. Those are the guys we want to draft. So again, can Wilson be good enough that he provides buoyancy to the offense, even if it doesn't make him a fantasy destination? That's why every quarterback matters, even if you're not drafting those guys specifically, because you might want to draft the pieces in that offense.
Great segue to our final question here for quarterbacks, which, Scott, I love a good quarterback competition in training camp. And we don't get as many of them. You know, mostly it's vagabond veteran versus rookie. We've got two of those situations. So a question here is, one, what's the quarterback battle like between JJ McCarthy and Sam Darnold? And two, what's the quarterback battle like between Drake May and Jacoby Brissett? I'm curious if if you think we see those rookies in week one or when we think we see them. And also, I'm curious, Scott, like our, I think our one true camp competition, two guys enter, one guy leaves, is the Raiders quarterback battle, Aiden O'Connell versus Gardner Minshew. And I give that like a, I know which one I think I'd rather see, but I think I give that like a 50-50 shot as to which one could start week one. So I'm curious, do you care about that quarterback battle? And for the rookies, how soon do you think we see those guys?
If I had the Raiders, I would just say, Devontae Adams, who do you want to play? We'll play that guy.
And I think he would say Aiden O'Connell. By the way, I think he would say Aiden O'Connell based on some of the – I haven't watched the receiver show on Netflix, but some of the clips and stuff I've seen, it seems like he likes playing with that guy. And, like, I just charted Devontae Adams for reception perception, Scott, and, my God, the Jimmy Garoppolo experience. I get why he was so upset with that, that Aiden O'Connell's like, hey, that guy's going to rip it to him on deep post routes, and he would be aggressive a little bit. And I think if he had to pick – it would be Aiden O'Connell. So that's why that's the guy I think I'd rather see, just because I care about Devontae Adams.
Yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo's effective NFL career ended that Monday night game in Detroit where the final score should have been like 70-0. It was one of those games where if you had a Detroit ticket, you're like, why are the Raiders still quasi competitive in this game where they did nothing? And all Garoppolo was doing was airmailing balls over a wide open Devontae Adams. It was just so frustrating to watch. And what the Raiders, they fired McDaniels after that game too. Yep. So they totally rebooted. You know, let's go with toughness and defense and running the ball. And I think Zamir White's actually an interesting pick this year. But so that's a bat. That's a 50-50. We're starting fresh. Nobody has a step up on anybody else. Now, in the case of the other two, New England, Minnesota, we know the quarterback of the future is McCarthy. We know the quarterback of the future is Drake May. The Patriots are, well, Jacoby Brissett. I talk about there aren't really too many right answers for backup quarterback. He is a right answer. And it's a shame we had to watch Sam Howell play just about all of last season. And then when Brissett would come in and you'd see Terry McLaurin be, you know, he was viable again. You'd see Terry McLaurin could breathe again, could see again, could walk again. You know, he was just magically fixed. And McLaurin's, you know, too classy of a pro to ever complain about that. But I'm sure those guys wonder, what could we have done? They wouldn't have been a playoff team. They would have been much better. I will pound the table for Terry McLaurin as just a really good football player who, for whatever reason, hasn't had the fantasy results he could have. It's been his quarterback play. But Brissett, just about the perfect guy they could sign because he's a good citizen. He knows what he's there for. It's to start the first – he's going to start opening day. And it could be 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. I don't know what it is. They want to teach Drake May and not overload him and add him into the mix when it makes sense. So I think that's probably 50-50 for the season. Maybe it's 10 games for Brissett, something like that. But they're going to onboard Drake May at their own pace. In Minnesota, it's more of who plays well at the summer is going to start opening day. I think they want it probably to be Darnold because they just don't want to expect miracles from McCarthy right away. Obviously, McCarthy came from that run-heavy scheme at Michigan. We'll talk about that, Jim Harbaugh and all that stuff a little bit later. But Darnold, and here's the thing with O'Connell, right? I mean, last year, I know there were a lot of turnovers. I know it was messy at times, but Kevin O'Connell could get like a 7.9 YPA or an 8.2 YPA out of anybody. And Darnold's one of these guys who just had such a horrible, you know, he got mono with the Jets and he was hurt all the time. And then he unfortunately went to San Francisco, but was never really needed to play. He's still just in his mid-20s. I'm not ready to give up on the idea that Sam Darnold is like a lost cause or anything, but eventually, O'Connell has to go to McCarthy. I get that. But that is who plays better this summer is going to it's gonna determine who plays for them on opening day.
Okay, let's say you draw the fifth pick in your draft, Scott. You take Justin Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want? Like, who do you think is better for Justin Jefferson? Because for the most part, I think that's what matters with this quarterback situation, right? I mean, we've got Aaron Jones, Jordan Addison, he's in some off-field trouble now. Hey, you know, TJ Hockenson, he's... Again, with Jordan Addison, he's in some vehicular issues. TJ Hockenson, I don't think he's going to play to start the season. So really, it's just, by the way, that also kind of decreases the potential buoyancy of this ecosystem, which I think is good for a young quarterback, and maybe good for Sam Darnold. But again, put all that aside, selfishly, you've got a veteran quarterback who has legitimately been one of the worst quarterbacks statistically in the league, being in this environment, or a rookie who wasn't asked to be the leading man in a great film in college. Which of those two guys, I know that's a simplified picture, there's more to pull apart, but which one of those two guys do you want to see if you draft Justin Jefferson in the first round?
Maybe I'm just the last apologist for Darnold, but I think I'd rather see Darnold because I don't think they would spoon feed him as much as they might spoon feed McCarthy right away. Obviously, McCarthy's got a much higher ceiling down the road, but if it's strictly a Justin Jefferson question, yeah, give me Sam. I'm okay with Sam Darnold. Again, O'Connell has done it. Look at the quarterbacks they had last year after Cousins got hurt, and he still, their passing game was fine. Their receivers still had good stats. Jefferson was really good when he came back. Addison, I know his stats were maybe better than what the tape and the RP charting showed, but I mean, he had a really good fantasy season. T.J. Hockenson, before he got hurt, was one of the best tight ends. I would not draft Addison or Hockenson on a bet right now, by the way. And unfortunately with Addison, there's just that knucklehead risk. I don't think Hockenson's going to play until very deep into the season. It just doesn't make sense to wait around for a guy like that. But yeah, I believe in O'Connell. So I believe in Sam Darnold, at least as a temporary guy. He's not a long-term solution. Nobody expects him to be that. I'm telling you right now, I've seen tomorrow's headlines today. Opening day, Sam Darnold, 290 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Who do the Vikings play in week one? That this is a competitive division too, by the way.
The fun division.
Week one is the Giants. I don't know. That's it. I mean, they have a pretty interesting pass rush now with Brian Burns there. Dexter Lawrence, Kayvon Thibodeau, and then the 49ers in week two. The problem I have with the Sam Darnold thing, and I think my answer is J.J. McCarthy. I get that, yeah, he's a rookie quarterback. You're probably not going to put as much on his plate. The book on Sam Darnold is the more you put on his plate, like the more you ask him to do, the more steam comes out of his ears. Like when the times he's been good in his career, which is not very often, but it was when, like, very beginning of his Panthers run, he had a pretty decent 3-game start because you're just like, get the ball to Christian McCaffrey, get the ball to DJ Moore and log out. Don't put too much else on his plate. And then when he was really efficient right at the end of that Panthers stretch before a horrible final game with Carolina where he was, like, unplayable against the Saints. But before that, he had, like, a decent stretch. It was just they were running the ball so much, playing good defense. But at the same time, Scott, to play devil's advocate to myself, I did watch the Nick Mullins games with Justin Jefferson, and Justin Jefferson was productive. It wasn't good football. Nick Mullins was not good, but that guy was just so willing to say F it and throw. Just, it doesn't matter what the coverage is. Doesn't matter where he was in the route. Just, we're throwing it to 18. So I can see why Darnold would be beneficial for fantasy, but I can also see he completely pees his pants against the Niners in week two, and Jefferson has like 2 catches for 18 yards on 10 targets or something like that. So there's no perfect answer, but I think we're in different spots here. I'd rather just see J.J. McCarthy earlier.
Does this quarterback room, we had a piece go up on Yahoo on Monday. Who's the number one receiver? Lamb's tied to Prescott. Hill has tried to McDaniel and to Tua, and Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are linked up together. Does the quarterback room, as it sits right now, does that make you nervous at all to draft Justin Jefferson, who's still, I think, widely accepted as the best receiver in the NFL?
I mean, not where he's going, like 5th overall pick, you're currently in best ball drafts. I don't think there's a better option there. Like, I'm not taking, I think I'm okay with it because I think either of these guys can still make him a productive player. I just think McCarthy is probably better for the offense in the long term, so he's the guy I'd want to see. And yeah, no, I think generally I'm okay with it. I think if you break ties in favor of Chase and Hill and Lamb ahead of Jefferson, I think that's okay.
Right, and I was remiss to not – we talked about quarterbacks coming off injury. It's, I know Chase was your number one receiver, and one of these years Ja'Marr Chase is going to score 22 touchdowns. But I would like to have – it may have to be – word of mouth, it may have to be a team source, because I don't know that Joe Burrow is going to do anything other than show up at preseason games and sit and watch them. But man, just please give Joe Burrow 4 healthy months, because I love Joe Burrow, but I just want to see Ja'Marr Chase go to the moon. And he again, a guy who could be on all the magazine covers next year, although he's on some of the magazine covers this year. That's how good Ja'Marr Chase is. He's coming off a okay season, and people still see the potential that he could be the guy who absolutely crushes fantasy.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll run through our running back pressing questions right after this. All right, we're back. Let's go through our running back questions here, Scott. Starting with, is Blake Corum a problem for Kyren Williams? I love this question. You actually did all of our running back questions, which I appreciate. These are really good. No notes from me here, but I love this one starting off, Scott, because yeah, what would you see from training camp that would make you a little nervous about Kyren Williams if you want to take him in the early second round of fantasy drafts?
So here's a big thing for me with the best coaches and the best offensive designers. I always say that they work talent to scheme, not scheme to talent, meaning they don't say, okay, this is the way I play and I'm going to force my team to play like this. Last year, Williams was just one of these guys who never came off the field, all packages, got hurt at times, may have worn down a little bit, but 5'9", 194. This is not somebody who's built to be, I think, a three-down bell cow back. Corum, he's not a tank either, but he's 5'8", 205. He's a little bit thicker. He had a better touchdown profile in college. Obviously, Michigan played a certain way that played into that. But when you draft Corum where they did, I got to figure that this could easily be a 70-30, a 65-35 right out of the box. And it makes me nervous to draft Williams where he's going right now.
I'm with you. Just this tweet from Hayden Winks is interesting. If we remove all of Kyren Williams' games where he played 80% or more of the snaps, so that he was trying to account for Blake Corum being mixed in, he averaged in those games 21.5 PPR points, 19.6 carries per game, and 3.1 targets per game. So I don't know if that's totally like conclusive here, but I guess the takeaway is that maybe there's some ground for Williams to give up and have a Blake Corum type of player in the offense playing legitimate snaps. And I think that could kind of be good for Kyren Williams, honestly. Like, he was a guy that wore down over that workload and had, he was a smaller back. He definitely had some high usage games and then had to miss some time. So maybe actually Blake Corum, I don't know, could be a welcome development, but I think seeing it as a problem is if we do start to get to that 50-50 or maybe even like in favor of Blake Corum. I do think that's within the range of outcomes here with this Rams backfield, just because like Corum, it was a legitimately really good player in college, a guy that we talked about with Charles McDonald on the podcast, like a pro ready player. Mm-hmm. If he comes in here and he just starts taking the job, not taking the job fully from Kyren Williams. They obviously love Kyren Williams, but I don't know. I just think there's a world where, yeah, Blake Corum does become a true legitimate problem. And I wonder if we'd get any signals from that in preseason and training camp.
Are you drafting Williams proactively? Where he's at right now?
I don't know about proactively, but I'm not outright avoiding him.
It's a yellow light. It's a yellow light for you.
Yellow light player. I think I end up going with wide receivers kind of in that range, but at the running back position, you know, he's around guys like Devon Achane. He's around guys like Travis Etienne. And I think I feel just about the same about Williams as I do with those two guys, if that makes sense.
Do you think I'm crazy? And I realize he's not a pass catcher, but do you think I'd be crazy to draft Derrick Henry over Williams?
You know what? This is only the natural contrarian in me, Scott. But the fact that every fantasy analyst is saying, oh, this guy's going to lead the NFL in rushing touchdowns. He's going to be awesome with the Ravens. That almost makes me think, like, what can go wrong here? Like, this is not going to work just because everybody thinks it's going to work. But that's not real analysis. I think ultimately Henry does. I think he projects out better than all three of those backs.
Well, last year they made Gus Edwards a touchdown machine, and Gus Edwards, last I checked, is on a new football team.
Speaking of which, our second running back question, the Chargers want to run. We know that, but who is the guy to get between Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, and Kamani Vidal? It's worth noting there was a piece today out about how, you know, Kamani Vidal and Isaiah Spiller are battling for one roster spot here potentially. So tracking this, we talked about it with the pass catchers with Dalton on the previous episode. I think all of these skill positions spots are just straight up battles, like who's the best player in camp. So that's why I think this is a critical situation to monitor.
Yeah, I talked about the best coaches being talent to scheme and not scheme to talent. Now, I think Jim Harbaugh is a very good coach, but he is somebody who says, this is my identity. Greg Roman's his OC. What did they do at Stanford? What did they do at San Francisco? What did Harbaugh do, obviously, at Michigan to win a national title? It's like, we're going to be more physical than you. We're going to beat you at the point of attack. We're not going to throw – it's like McCarthy's such a hard guy to evaluate because he just didn't throw the ball that much at Michigan. And it makes – man, I love Justin Herbert. He's just undraftable for fantasy. And I know you guys talked – you and Dalton talked last week on the show, and what a great program that was. Go back and listen to some wonderful wide receiver and tight end discussions that I really enjoyed that hour. So I can't recommend it highly enough. But you guys were talking up, well, you know, Justin Herbert can still play and maybe he'll be he'll have a better efficiency season than expected. The problem is I just don't see where the volume's going to come from. And this is why it's so important, I think, to get this backfield right, because I could see Gus Edwards being running back 14. I don't know totally. If how healthy Dobbins is. I'd like to get some signal from that. Vidal was a player who I thought was kind of a trendy sleeper maybe a month ago, but he is a sixth-round pick, as you talked about. Maybe he is on the roster bubble with Spiller. And when a new coach comes in, they have, and I know they drafted Vidal, but late enough that they could easily walk away from him.
Yeah.
There's no affiliation. They're not tied to anything here, right? Everything's new. That's why, you know, Quentin Johnson is a washout, is a rookie. New team comes in. You know, they'll like to get Johnston going, but if he doesn't work out for them, hey, we inherited this guy. Yeah, we didn't
they'll just play DJ
guy,
Chark over him. Tough scene.
For sure. Yeah. DJ Chark is a great sleeper, for sure, especially in best ball. But I think Edwards, and look, they all have fleas, right? Maybe Vidal's not in the roster. Dobbins has been hurt so much. Edwards is another guy who just doesn't catch passes, and he's kind of later in his trajectory. But I feel like Gus Edwards has double-digit touchdowns already in his bank right now. So I'm open-minded. My build is going to be get that one anchor bank, anchor back that hero RB, and then I'm going to go thrift shopping for the rest of those guys. And I think Gus Edwards fits that build really well.
Yeah, I like Gus Edwards. He's going as running back 40 right now in best ball drafts, and I think that's totally fair. He's the top-ranked guy here. I think he's got the best shot of just being like hitting a double. You know, I think if you draft Gus Edwards here, I did find it interesting that Daniel Jeremiah on his podcast, and obviously he calls games for the Chargers, so he knows the organization. He was like, he literally said, if you play fantasy, like draft J.K. Dobbins. I don't know that that's necessarily like an endorsement of the health and all that stuff, but yeah, if Dobbins is miraculously healthy, he definitely is set up to go in this offense. So I haven't been drafting him, you know, proactively, J.K. Dobbins, but I don't mind throwing like a sleeper spot. Like I did take him very, very late in the Scott Fishbowl, because you have to draft every player in the league in the Scott Fishbowl. So, you know, I think that's the right move with Dobbins. But yeah, like paying attention to this backfield is going to be critical. Same thing in Tennessee, Scott, where we only have two guys. And I actually am not sure that this offense is going to run the ball a lot. I think they're going to throw the ball a lot more. But do we get any clues on the Tony Pollard versus Tajay Spears running back committee there in Tennessee?
Yeah, I would love some clues here, and I'll admit what Pollard did last year, what he didn't do, just kind of has me spooked. Spears is younger, maybe just a little bit more pep in the step. I lean towards Spears, but I need to – this is all speculation. I'd like to see some stuff crystallize in the summer. I have not drafted these guys proactively, but I will say this. I have some Spears in my portfolio. I have not had this – didn't Dalton have Pollard number two last year? Number one – ranker, by the way, at the running back position, despite Tony Pollard. That's how good Dalton Del Don's running back ranks were last year. And you guys talked about
what is the methodology? I want to know, how do they grade the rankings if Dalton had Tony Pollard as number two? I mean, I guess he ended up finishing his running back like 14 or something. So it wasn't like a
It
felt worse than it actually played out.
That's a good way of saying it. And also, I love about Dalton is he believes in what he believes in. He's not trying to win a contest. Some people kind of like, okay, I'm just going to wisdom a crowd this thing, and you know, where's everybody else in lockstep? Dalton's like, no, this is what I believe. This is where I'm ranking my guys. You get a statement on Dalton Del Don looking at his rankings that I don't think, with the maybe exception of Brad Evans, I can't think of anybody else who ranks in fantasy like that. So it's I'm just glad that Dalton's on our team, and I'm proud of him.
Same.
Look, you're a Chark guy. You're in the weeds doing stuff that nobody else does, and I appreciate that. You know, Andy and I have had good runs as rankers, but right now Dalton is wearing the yellow jersey, and I'm proud of him. We were talking about what was going to survive the script, and I wouldn't have been sad if we got rid of the Tennessee running back discussion, but I feel like right now all we can do is speculate, and maybe I have to get over what Pollard did last year. Was he healthy? It's always the thing with running backs when they have bad seasons is, you know, how hurt were they? And right. Was the scheme just wrong for them? It's at least he's getting out of town at the right time. I lean Spears right now, but I'm open-minded to changing my mind.
I also think I lean Spears right now just because of where he's at in his career as a running back, but I'm also open-minded. I think we actually kind of, we're both like, we don't have, I think we have lukewarm takes on this backfield. And I think, yeah. Sure. I'm hoping that something from training camp and preseason gives us a lean here. So let's go to the next one. Is there a straight committee or perhaps more of a flip coming to the Saints backfield, Scott Pienowski? You really want to discuss Alvin Kamara, where he is and how Kendre Miller, their second year running back, who I really thought was an exciting prospect, but he had a kind of an injury riddled rookie season, where he fits into this equation.
Yeah, this is a big one for me, because you have a player near the end of his career. You have a player entering his second season. Miller was mostly hurt last year. He did have a nice game at the end of the season. Kamara, the explosion is gone. He didn't have a single 20-yard run last year, and they don't manufacture the chippy touchdowns for him when they get near the goal line. It's all this other stuff. Taysom Hill comes on the field. Alvin Kamara just doesn't have that 15-touchdown, a bunch of short touchdown seasons in his range of outcomes anymore. Maybe at one point he did. He doesn't make the splash plays anymore. He survived last year because Derek Carr loved the check down to him, and despite the receiving metrics for Kamara going way down. If nothing else, I would say just don't draft Alvin Kamara. You do want to be a year early, not a year late on a player like that. And the Saints really like Miller. I know the offensive line isn't as good as it's been in years past. It's a below average offensive line by most of these sites that rank those things. They did draft into the position, so we'll see how the young talent is there. And maybe it's an average offensive line. It's not going to be like this top 10 offensive line that we've been used to with the Saints during the Peyton years. So I think at some point we're going to be having fantasy discussions of who's really the Saints' primary back. I think Miller has the chance to be that guy at some point in the middle of the year. It won't be on opening day. My takeaway, I'm not drafting Alvin Kamara, and I think Kendre Miller is a perfect target for the second half of your draft.
Jamal Williams still kicking around on this roster too, by the way. I think he's the only player Dennis Allen said a nice thing publicly about when he was doing
it. And Hill's going to get the 5 or 6 bullshit touchdowns too. I get it.
Yeah, 100%. Like, that's not going away. It's crazy that the Saints were ninth in scoring last year, Scott. Who scored those touchdowns? It was all like Taysom Hill and Jimmy Graham. So, I mean, Graham's not on the roster anymore. But that is a talk about something that did not feel that way. It was the Saints scoring, being the ninth highest scoring team. But yeah, I
are you here for the Raheed Shaheed breakout?
Oh, baby, I'm so here for it. I'm Scott, so here.
Basically, he's the cover boy of the Scott Fishbowl, right? Because he's gonna, you would think, get the return yard. So he was going before Chris Olave in most rooms.
It's gonna be great when Taysom Hill's like the punt returner for God knows what.
The Saints will make you unhappy at some point. I will guarantee you that.
I know, and I really love Shaheed, and I mean, I'm a huge Chris Olave fan. I think he's a really nice bet to take a big leap this season with the changes in the offensive environment. I am weirdly interested in the Saints offense, but I haven't had a really strong take on the Saints backfield. So I think, because I have no idea how they run from like a run scheme perspective. Are they going to be more just outside zone, typical Shanahan stuff? Are they going to be more of a power run team? How does Kendre Miller fit into either of those schemes? I think is really interesting. And yeah, just I'm with you that generally I know like some of the opportunity stuff and everything looks good with Kamara, but I have not drafted my way into him too
Do
often this year.
Not draft Alvin Kamara. You can throw that in my face if he has a great season. I'll live with it. Go ahead. You can cold takes expose me all you want. Do not draft this guy this year. That's my takeaway here.
I have a bad feeling that Aaron, our social editor, who's on the call, is like, clip at the 57 second mark. Make sure to tweet that out. And Scott, hopefully that you're, I hope you're right on that one. Cause otherwise
every Kamara touchdown this year is going to kill me. I'm going to die. Yeah,
they're going to replay that slow take you just did there, which is not a Scott Pianowski move. So means you feel strongly.
And the Saints have a really, you know, they have a long schedule. Memory fan base. They are, you know, it's a different type of city for sports. You know, they have a basketball team that, you know, is quasi relevant, but they don't, they're all about the Saints, right? And I guess LSU to an extent too. But they will remember. They will have long memory. Even if Kamara has a bad season, you know, the one day he goes for 3 touchdowns and 150 yards, I'm just going to get ruined in my mentions. But you know what? That's what we're here for.
Next one up here, Zach Moss or Chase Brown in Cincinnati? And what are we looking for at a training camp? I think this is another one that could end up just being a straight committee. But very curious as to, again, what type of offense are the Bengals going to be? They were two very different offenses when Burrow was on the field versus Jake Browning was on the field. And I think that I can see Zach Moss in both. I can honestly probably see him a little bit better in the Burrow offense. I have gravitated towards Zach Moss if I'm picking a Bengals back, Scott. But do you feel differently? And is there anything that you'd see in camp that would maybe change your mind on that?
You know, this is the kind of the cleanest of these running back situations we're talking about, because I think they do different things well. And it's just going to be 60-40, 55-45. Maybe some hot hand comes in where Brown doesn't start the game, but he has a really good series, and they want to roll with that. Of course, Brown makes more sense probably as the hurry-up back, two-minute drill, stuff like that. So game flow is going to – there's going to be games where, like opening day, the Bengals – by the way, if you're somebody who just goes week-to-week on defense, the Bengals are the biggest favorite opening day, 9.5-point favorites over the Patriots. So maybe you don't like the Bengals defense long-term, but if you just look at the point spreads, they make sense as a week one rental. Say right now you're not going to draft a defense probably in a lot of fantasy leagues, and then you'll pick up the Bengals later. It's one of my favorite hacks for the 2024 season. But this is a case of, you know, Moss does this, Brown does that. Most teams accept that they need two running backs now. So maybe nobody has to be a big winner here. It makes Moss like maybe a running back three. It makes Brown like a running back four, a flex option, somebody who gets more run when we get into injury season, into bye week season that kind of kicks in October. I think they're both draftable. Moss should be the first target. I just don't know that there's a very reasonable range of outcomes where Moss like shoves Brown out of the way and like, oh yeah, Zach Moss has to be like our Joe Mixon. I just don't think there's any chance that happens.
All right, final question here. Will there be a resolution to a messy Denver backfield? As you said, Scott, on the outline, nebulous is where the profit is. I was stunned, Scott, to open my Twitter app or X app on Saturday, Sunday, whatever it was, and see every fantasy analyst I follow seemingly tweeting and having a take about the Denver backfield. And this is not the first time this has happened, that a beat writer who covers a team, Observer covers a team, has theorized that Javonte Williams could be on the roster bubble. Mm-hmm. And seemingly, again, every fantasy analyst, best ball bro I follow had a strong take about the Denver backfield. I do not have a strong take about the Denver backfield other than, and I guess maybe this is why they all care, Sean Payton has typically produced some productive backfields during his tenure as an NFL head coach and play caller. Scott, what do you think is going to happen in Denver? Because apparently everybody's got a thought on it.
Yeah, I mean, last year they did catch a lot of passes as a backfield. They could not run in a touchdown to save their life. Remember, Peyton inherited Williams. Williams had an injury-checkered career. I mean, we'll always remember, you know, the monster he looked like in one of those Kansas City games. We thought, okay, here we go, Javonte Williams season. But we're at a point now, we're deep enough in his career. It gets late early in running back careers that maybe Williams just doesn't have a major ceiling. And P. Ryan, who's the oldest back here, they like him because he's so good in hurry-up as a blitz protector. That's what, you know, doesn't make fantasy value, but it puts him on the field. He will catch some passes from that as well. McLaughlin undersized, so he does. What's his ceiling, right? I mean, how many touches can he ever have in a given week? It just doesn't make sense to overuse a player like that. Estime was a later round pick. I liked his tape out of Notre Dame. Here's the bottom line, okay? I'm worried that even if Williams isn't cut, I don't think they're high on Williams. I don't think he's guaranteed anything. I think he's just one bad game or one bad blitz pickup or one bad fumble away from being on the bench. The player I would most like to draft here is Estime, but it has to be, you know, he's like one of your lottery tickets on your bench. You're never playing him opening day, and you may even need to consider cutting him when October kicks in with those bye weeks and injuries. And then you're like, how much longer can I wait for something like this? And maybe even the cases don't draft Estime, but pick him up when somebody else has to make a forced cut on him. I'm not drafting Williams. I'm interested in Estime. I think McLaughlin, if you can live with a player who's like 8 to 12 touches every week, is kind of the range for him. If you can live with a guy like that as a flex player, I'm fine with it. P. Runt's just going to be there because he can block. It's a mess, but it's Sean Payton, so we have to investigate this mess.
Here's some things I believe. One, I agree with you. Messy backfield, you can't just say, oh, Patriots running backs, well, I never draft those guys because it's hard to read. No, no, no. It's one of the best teams in the league. You need to draft running backs from backfields that produce productive players.
And Garrett Blunt scored 18 touchdowns once upon a time, too. Let's not forget that.
And I listen, shout out to me. I don't get a lot of things right, but I was in on the LeGarrette Blunt season for that very logic that I just said in that stupid
shout out to
in
you.
My stupid voice. Yes, shout out to me for that. Don't ask me about a lot of other things, but you can ask me about the LeGarrette Blunt 18 touchdown season or whatever. Anyways, I also believe that Denver, like when there's smoke, there's fire. Okay. Typically, yes, beat writer opinions, you can take it with a grain of salt, roster projection stuff, but there's at least some reason they're theorizing that Javonte Williams is not going to be on the roster. Okay. Like, so these are just like general beliefs, but this specific situation, I have no idea. The third thing I definitely believe, Scott, is while Javonte Williams was a little, you know, people got over their skis with him prior to the injury. He wasn't a perfect back. There were some issues. Was a very promising player. Was coming off a devastating injury last year, and I think he came back a little too early from it. If the Broncos are trying to get out of the Javonte Williams business, if they're going to cut him, like if I'm the Dallas Cowboys or any of these teams, I'm on the phone. Like I'm saying, hey, sixth round pick, whatever, take this. I'm interested in Javonte Williams on another team, because I do think there might be some quality play left in him. So. Well, I didn't think I had a take on this. That's kind of my just general rules to follow when we're talking about NFL backfields and just guys that are coming off serious injuries. You know, it's, maybe they never get it back, right? Michael Gallup, I don't think he ever got it back. You know, I'm hoping Rashad Bateman gets it back this year after some serious injuries. But sometimes guys are just never the same. Maybe Javonte Williams is never the same. But other times, once we get it farther and farther away from those serious injuries, they get their fastball back. And if he gets his fastball back on a different team, I think he could end up actually being a great fantasy pick. But I'm with you that I don't want to proactively draft anybody in Denver right now.
Right. The best case scenario would be he becomes like Donta Foreman or somebody like that. Major injury, had to bounce around. And it feels like every time Foreman's asked to play, he looks good.
Totally. That's a great comparison. I think that could be possible for Javonte Williams. All right, Scott, I have a bonus question here for you. As we're taping this, at My Sports Update shares that Chiefs head coach Andy Reid, since we're talking running backs, said they've been giving Kadarius Toney running back snaps during camp because they saw positive moments there last season. Reid believes that Toney enjoys playing that role, so the team is going to try to utilize it to the best of his ability at training camp. No question, Scott. I just want you to react to that.
You just want to make me mad. I want to draft Isaiah Pacheco in the second round and you're just trying to get me off track. I question if this is even a real story, and I'm still drafting Pacheco in the second round. Kadarius Toney is not in my fantasy life.
I'm with you about Isaiah Pacheco. I will say, though, I mean, my thing with Kadarius Toney, it's like, okay, yeah, he drops the ball a ton. Guy has never been a good route runner in his life. Like, okay, you can show me a couple cutesy routes against the Cowboys in that one game. Show me the 100, 200, 300, 400 other routes, okay? They're all bad. That's a reason he's never been a high-quality, play-every-snap type of receiver. Is that not the Cordarrelle Patterson story? Remember when CPAT moved to running back with the Falcons? He gave us those moments?
Interesting.
I'm going to say I'm 3% interested in this story about Tony, because he's never been a real wide receiver, but he truly is very high on the he moves different scale. So I'm a little bit interested in this, but my general take is if they're having him move to different positions, he's probably on the roster bubble as Kadarius.
I can just picture the Sunday night clip, right, where Chris Collins was like, well, Patrick Mahomes thought Tony's going to break off this route. And they're not on the same page right now. You see Patrick's frustrated. He knows this is supposed to be a 30-yard completion. And then Tony runs off the field, you know, with that kind of confused look on his face and Andy Reid shaking his head. I can see that right now. It's crystallized in my mind.
Oh, see, I see week one. 11 carries, 51 yards, and a touchdown for Kadarius.
Don't do this to me.
It's the opening game.
Matt, we have never been more polarized as a country, but we are all unified in our frustration of Kadarius Toney. Do not take this away from us when we need it the most.
I told you, I warned you earlier that maybe it's just the natural contrarianism.
You are a natural contrarian,
but
for sure.
Yeah, maybe I need to reevaluate my life and take a look in the mirror.
Yeah, I want you to double chart Kadarius Toney. I want you to go through and see if you can find any of the plays that he actually ran the ball. And I want a detailed, 23-minute read on Yahoo on Kadarius Toney by the end of the week.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, buddy. I have, an absurd amount of players in my, my charting options every offseason. I don't think Kadarius Toney's on there, and I don't think he's going to make it because he's going to be a running back next year. So whoever's charting the running backs is going to be charting Kadarius Toney. No, okay, yeah, that is enough. This podcast needs
hashtag
to
Toney, Toney, Toney has done it again. Okay.
This was a great show, Scott, right up until the end ruined it with Kadarius
Toney. Kadarius Toney ruined it. It's not you. It's not me. It's Kadarius Toney's fault.
If you look at the outline, producer Colin put it on the outline. I take no responsibility. I'm Ron Burgundy. If it's on the outline, we've got to talk about it.
Burgundy's going to read it. Yeah. Harmon's going to read
it. I've definitely never strayed off the outline or done something.
The show's always great when Colin, adds to it, whether it's Dallas Intel or it's, I know he had one of the questions last week in the Dalton show. So it's always, It's like 6 feet under is always great when the father got involved, you know, or I think Bill Simmons' podcast is great when his father is a guest, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, producer Colin, I'm all for his inclusion on this program.
It's incredible that you feel that way. And Andy Behrens exists only to rip Colin when we do mock drafts. So on that note, I think the show has gone on long enough. Scott, great show. Appreciate you, buddy. What are you working on right now for the people get excited about on the website?
Sure. So Frank Schwab is going through his NFL power rankings, 32-1. I know who are those top teams, but you don't. I'm giving a fantasy nugget for every team, and we're actually putting them out on the Yahoo pages by division. We did the NFC South yesterday. I forget which team is today, but these are like 2 to 3 paragraph hot takes on every NFL team, the good teams, the bad teams, by division. So I want you to check those out. You're working on NHL fantasy hockey rankings. I'm sure you're excited about that. Still doing fantasy baseball content as well, and a ton of football. There's some really exciting new things coming your way. I'm not even sure what I can even talk about, but there's some new things we're doing this year for fantasy football. I'm going to be involved, and I can't wait to talk about that. Far away. Keep your ears open in August.
Yes. Whenever we can talk about that publicly, Scott, we'll have you back on to share that very exciting news. But for now, 100%. People should be reading Frank's pieces. They're all bangers, and your inclusion is
so good.
An extremely welcome part of Frank's incredible team previews. All right. On that note, that is going to do it for today. But we're going to be back on Thursday with an electric episode. It's going to be great. Yahoo's very own Jory Epstein will be joining me. She is at Packers camp today. She's at Bears camp later this week. We're going to dive into the biggest whispers coming out of mini camp and can they be sustained into training camp. That is what this offseason, that's what this part of the calendar is all about. Following the drumbeats. That's what we're going to be doing with Jory on Thursday. Until then, we're out.